Good morning, everybody. Thanks so much for being here. As Maurice mentioned, Anne, myself, and Ed, and he are all from WestDAT, and though the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality is the funder for the activities of the Healthcare Innovations Exchange Project, the opinions that we may express as part of our presentation are not officially representative of those of the agency. And I just wanted to mention that we have no financial disclosures of any or anything of that sort. So to begin, a little bit of background about the Healthcare Innovations Exchange Project. The Innovations Exchange was launched about 8 years ago, and it really was designed to provide a rich resource to support decision making for potential adoption and implementation of both healthcare policies and healthcare delivery innovations. And the Innovations Exchange really has two primary goals. The first is to accelerate the diffusion and uptake of innovations, quality tools, policies to improve quality and reduce disparities, but also to facilitate the active exchange and dissemination of this information by providing usable information about these innovations that's available, readily available through a publicly available database, and also by supporting learning and networking opportunities. So here is the homepage of the Healthcare Innovations Exchange. This is really the portal into the website and the database. And currently, the Innovations Exchange houses over 900 innovations. And their descriptions of the innovations, kind of case studies or profiles as we call them, and they describe how the innovations work, why they're needed, the results that they've achieved, and the implementation processes that went into getting the innovations up and running. The website also includes about 1,500 quality tools, which are practical toolkits, algorithms, checklists, things that you can download and access to help facilitate the implementation of innovations that are designed to improve healthcare quality. So the Innovations Exchange recently had a shift that went from focusing on building this content and this database to really actively fostering some learning and networking, and again, going back to the goal of actively promoting diffusion and exchange of information, they decided to focus on learning communities. And this was a recent shift as of September 2014, so we're just actually entering our second year with the learning communities. But if you've done any work in this area, you've probably heard, you know, communities of practice, knowledge sharing networks, learning collaboratives, learning communities. So there are some different sorts of nomenclature that goes around, and I just wanted to put forth the definition that the Innovations Exchange used for the learning communities. And so we defined our learning community as a select group of potential innovation adopters and stakeholders who interact and engage in a shared learning process to facilitate the adaption and implementation of innovations that were featured on the Innovations Exchange website. So as I mentioned, beginning in September 2014, we shifted our attention to three learning communities that were designed to scale up and spread innovations to improve the processes of care. And I think it's important to note we went through some pretty significant legwork in determining what the focus of the learning communities would be. And we tried to identify high priority topic areas. We also tried to leverage establishing connections that we had through the Innovations Exchange. If we had a cluster of content or some strong champions that we had existing relationships with, we really explored those kind of foundational activities as we decided which learning communities to pursue. And I think it's also important to note that the learning communities all had a similar underlying structure and framework, but the three learning communities that the Innovations Exchange has supported over the past year are the Reducing Non-Urgent Emergency Services community, which is the community about which I'll be speaking, and that's in the Detroit metropolitan area. medication therapy management, which Maurice will speak about, and then patient and family-centered care in hospitals in Florida, which is Anne's learning community. And these learning communities not only provided an opportunity to understand how areas adopt and adapt innovations from the Innovations Exchange, they also provided a really unique opportunity to further dive into the science of practice improvement, meaning what does it take to implement innovations and make these positive changes? And each of our learning communities is very different, and so it's really been interesting to see how there are commonalities and also differences across the three learning communities. So this is something that we acknowledged was an important opportunity and have been trying to take advantage of that. So this slide is very dense, and I'm sure you can't read the text that's on there, but I think we do have handouts if you'd like to explore a little further. But I just wanted to make note that this is the framework that underlies all three learning communities. And in brief, it includes a variety of inputs, sources of knowledge, and participation. It explains some of the activities that were used to support the learning communities, a variety of outputs to share and support and strengthen the learning communities, and then also focus on short and long-term outcomes that relate to sustainability. So those are really the four pillars of the framework. Before we dive into our individual presentations, it's important to note that each learning community really has its own unique context, and we'll talk about those in our individual presentations. But there are different environmental characteristics in terms of who's involved, the systems, the decision makers, the political characteristics and climate that go into the learning communities. There are also very different innovation characteristics. The topics of the innovations are quite different. Some are focused at the care process level, some focus on staff roles, others on organizational structure or policy, and the adopting organizations and entities are also quite different across the learning communities. The innovations themselves are also vary in how they're defined. For some of the learning communities, they intended to adopt a very specific innovation or group of innovations. For another of the learning communities, the innovation really wasn't defined. It was an exercise of going through, seeing what options there were, what innovations existed, and then adapting that for their own contextual environment. So really, the very fundamental activities of the learning communities were very different. And also, their goals as a result were also there was a large variation. And as a consequence, the implementation tactics and tools that the learning communities used to support their work were very different, and there were different short and long-term measurement goals. So with that overview, I'll now dive into the specific emergency services learning community. To begin, a little bit of background, why this learning community was necessary. Here's some data, it's a little bit old, but some foundational data that really exemplifies this challenge in the Detroit community, and I'm sure this was not limited to the Detroit area. Many communities face the same problem, but they have a large volume of 911 calls every year, but only a portion of them are truly emergencies. Priority one or two means those that are loss of life or limb, or those that are truly urgent and require emergency service care. 75% of the calls in Detroit are non-urgent or non-transport and don't require transport to emergency department. And so this imbalance in the priorities is really very costly, and it diverts resources that could be used for true emergencies. It lengthens runtime, and it really has some implications in terms of budgetary issues. They estimated that it's about $10 million that it costs a system that's already burdened with an $11 million deficit. So this is truly a challenge for the Detroit community. So as I mentioned, beginning in September 2014, the Reducing Non-Urgent Emergency Services received support from the Healthcare Innovations Exchange. And we established a very simple or general goal of reducing non-urgent and frequent use of emergency services. And to move forward with that goal, we assembled a multi-stakeholder, community-wide learning community that it was dedicated to finding solutions to achieve the goal. So who did we bring to the table? Right now, we have over 25 service agencies in the Detroit community, and these represent really five core systems of service delivery in Detroit: EMS, health, mental health, substance abuse, and social services. It's important to note that from these organizations, top-level leaders are actively engaged. We have the EMS chief, the fire commissioner, the representatives from the city and county health departments, and the mental health authority that oversees behavioral health care in the city. And though they may delegate and have other representatives attend, these really high-level leaders have been actively involved in the community, and their leadership has been really integral. We also have champions from the Voices of Detroit initiative, which had existing relationships with these systems and really helped us ease into that transition very, very nicely, and had was able to leverage those relationships to support the work of the learning community. And we also have champions at Wayne State University, one of the large universities in the area. And then finally, we've engaged our innovator consultants. These are individuals whose work was featured on the Innovations Exchange website, and they all had a common goal of addressing frequent and non-urgent emergency service use. We have innovators from MedStar in Texas, San Diego Resource Access Program in California, and the Pathways to Better Health Initiative in Michigan. Once we rallied the learning community around the goal of reducing frequent and non-urgent emergency service use, we decided to create three fairly operational aims. The first is to identify non-urgent, high utilizers of emergency services, so that identification piece. We need to know who these people are to be able to help them. The second aim is improving coordination between these different agencies, between emergency services, primary care, behavioral health, and social services, since these agencies all have a role in helping to address this problem. And then the ultimate goal is to appropriately reduce non-urgent and high utilization of emergency services by exploring effective service delivery models to meet the target population's need. So these were fairly lofty aims, and we realized that we weren't going to be able to achieve all of them in the first year, but we wanted to at least begin to address the first and second aim by developing a cross-system protocol that is designed to start to lay that groundwork for identification and coordination of care for these individuals. So what did we do? We held full group, and every month we held full group and often multiple subcommittee meetings to really take concrete steps toward implementing these solutions via the development of this cross-system protocol. And it's very important to note that this was a time-consuming activity and required a lot of work on our part. We had frequent calls with our champions, individual calls and communication with our learning community members to really understand what their needs were, what their challenges were, and then we used that information to kind of inform what solutions or services we brought to them and what supports we provided. We also reviewed the Innovations Exchange collection, and we came across a host of innovations. I think there were probably 40 that were at least somewhat relevant. And we worked with the champions and learning community members to identify those that were most relevant, and went through some activities figuring out which might be a good fit for the Detroit community. And then we actually brought the innovators in. They presented, they spoke, they shared their challenges, and having that perspective was really very helpful for the learning community. We also consulted with some of the leadership in the local and regional area, as well as the state, to ensure that what we were doing, the changes we were trying to make, were legal, that it was something that would fit within current legislative mandates, and that before we started pursuing a path, that we weren't going to waste time and energy on a solution that wasn't going to be feasible to implement. Which leads me to my next point. There were definitely some things that we reviewed that just weren't going to be feasible, whether it be staff restraints, budgetary implications, or that it just contradicted what current law is in Michigan, and which really was an important foundational activity for deciding which solutions to pursue. And then all of these activities fed into our accomplishment of implementing a protocol, which launched in early to mid-May, which allows EMS personnel to actually make real-time referrals in the field for patients who the EMS staff identify as having non-urgent needs, or if they feel the individual or the family member could benefit from additional healthcare or social support services, they will also make those referrals to outside agencies, which will then follow up with them, with the individual, to provide comprehensive assessments and additional follow-up care, wraparound care, and referrals. And it is important to note that currently the protocol requires that anyone still be, even if a referral is made, still be transported to the emergency department unless that person chooses not to. In addition to that referral protocol, the learning community also established a process to offer similar services to those who they call the super users, the top 25 individuals who use EMS or 911 services the most. And so, though the mechanism is a little bit different, it's the same concept of identifying those individuals and following up with them to provide additional care. We also began a process to identify hotspot locations where there's a significant number of 911 calls, many of which are non-urgent, and are exploring strategies to connect those patients with more appropriate care. And then finally, we developed a standardized data collection intake form that's helping us track key performance metrics over time. So we are only in our first year of launching, but I wanted to share a few results to date. Since in the first 4 months of the protocol implementation, EMS has referred about 130 patients to the designated agencies. We're also in the process of implementing and further developing the tools to track and share additional outcomes. And so far, we really only have anecdotal information, but the information that we do have indicates that some super users have decreased their use of 911 services. People who were previously on that top 25 list have now dropped off. So there's some very preliminary anecdotal information that's having somewhat of an effect. And though not directly related to the learning community, I think it's important to note that the learning community engagement has also led to some indirect outcomes. Just having all of these top level leaders at the table and being able to establish those relationships has led to some broader agency changes. So for example, EMS, they were acutely aware of this issue, and having them engaged in the learning community has really brought it to the forefront. And so they actually hired new staff, and as a result, they decreased their runtime, the time that it takes for an ambulance to respond to a person who calls 911, by 8 minutes, which is a pretty good improvement. They almost, cut it in half. And they also recently implemented a new dispatch system, which is now allowing them to categorize the urgency of 911 calls more accurately, which was a challenge for them because some of the innovations that we considered were ruled out because there wasn't great confidence that a person who was coded as a non-urgent call was truly non-urgent. And so this new dispatch system is giving us more confidence that those individuals truly are non-urgent and then could maybe receive a separate set of services. As part of our work with the learning community, we have collected some information from our members. We did some baseline needs assessment calls and also some follow-up surveys, and after every meeting we also collect some evaluation information. And here are just a few snippets of quotes from our learning community members, but I think by and large our feedback is that this learning community model has been very effective and well received. And the support that the community has received through the Innovations Exchange has also been very important, and that they appreciate being able to work with other community members, and that having access to the innovators through the Innovations Exchange and hearing their frontline stories and understanding what their implementation challenges were has really been a valuable thing. So just a few minutes on some lessons learned. For the Detroit community, facilitating these public and private partnerships has been very effective for making the types of change that are required for this community, these system level changes. And the learning community model has worked really well for that. These individuals, these agencies, weren't necessarily communicating or talking to each other. And so having this standard format or mode through the learning community model of bringing them together, having them work collectively on challenges, has really been effective for building these partnerships, which has then led to the ability to make this type of cross-system level change. And similarly, the Innovations Exchange and the ability to use it as a resource and to share innovation, best practices, and make experts accessible has really helped the Detroit community. Just giving them a sense of here's the gamut of everything that's going on to address this problem, and they could pick and choose and figure out what some of the core components across these innovations were, and then take that into their community. It's been very helpful to help. It's been very helpful to enable them to build this infrastructure and try and put pieces in place to serve a very complex long-term problem. A few other points before I wrap up. The most effective solutions may be limited by contextual and infrastructure factors. It's natural to say, okay, we have this problem, let's do this and this and this and this and this and this, and that's sometimes not realistic. And you have to develop sometimes incremental solutions and make progress very, very slowly and moderately. And then use that to build and create new changes. And it's a multi-step process, and having short and long-term goals really helps to keep the community engaged and helps to ensure that momentum keeps going forward and that enthusiasm of the learning community members is maintained. And the role of the champions has been very critical for the learning community. Having them speak about the work of the learning community within their own spheres or circles, and creating that momentum and being able to address, to engage others in the community has been a very critical aspect for our learning community. So the role of the champions cannot be understated. Just a few minutes on the future activities for our learning community to just give a sense of where we're hoping to go in the next year. We're hoping to refine our process and outcomes measures for assessing the impact of protocol implementation, and similarly collecting and aggregating data to track these measures. We're looking for opportunities to refine the protocol and maximize its effectiveness. We're also continuing to work with hotspot locations to explore alternate solutions. And we're considering implementing an additional aspect of the protocol that would allow tiered response or diversion of patients to alternate care settings in real time. And this ties back a little bit to the dispatch system that I mentioned, but being able to avoid even sending the ambulance to begin with, and maybe having a van or some older response that could go out for the non-urgent calls, or even doing some sort of assessment in the field, determining that a patient's condition is truly non-urgent, and then avoiding the hospital altogether, maybe setting up a clinic appointment or rerouting them to an alternate care setting. So those are some of the things we're considering in the year going forward, but it's been a great experience. The community has made a lot of positive change in our short time period, and we're hopeful that the next year will bring even more exciting prospects. So thank you.